Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And happy Party Friday, everybody. Chuck Bonnywell, Julie Hayden here on the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Truth Straight Up, the show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. Chuck is wrapping up some business here at the Chuck and Julie Podcast World Headquarters. He'll be joining us in a second. Want to start off, though, with Dave Williams, the chair of the Colorado Republican Party. First off, Dave, hey, thank you for your time on this Friday afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So Monday, the big trial starts. A group of traitor fake Republicans filed a lawsuit funded by Democrats saying that Trump should not be able to be on the ballot in Colorado because he's an insurrectionist, even though none of that has been determined even remotely. And you, to your great credit, got hold of not only is the Trump campaign fighting this, but the Colorado State Republican Party is fighting this, too. And why don't I get you to explain that? And then we can talk about what we think is going to be happening next week.
Yeah, you bet. This all started, I believe, back in the beginning of September. Crew, as they are so named, is funding the lawsuit on behalf of six or so Republicans who are, you know, I really don't consider them Republicans anymore.
I don't think they ever were Republicans, but anyway.
This is certainly a betrayal to the party, and it's un-American. But
right.
they put forward this lawsuit to kick Donald Trump off the ballot, citing some novel, untested, theory connected to the 14th Amendment, falsely claiming that President Trump has engaged in insurrection and therefore should not be eligible for office. There are many, problems with this theory, and I think ultimately we're going to win, whether it's in on this district level or through appeals. I think we're going to win because it's so outrageous. I know Democrats and Democrat appointed judges can be outrageous at times, but this is so beyond the pale that I just can't imagine a court saying, you know what, we're going to go ahead and violate the principle of one man, one vote and take away your options on a ballot.
Right. Well, I know it's been thrown out in Arizona, right? I mean, the same fund people are not in the actual plaintiffs on the lawsuit, but the same funding, are doing this all over in the country. And in Arizona, I think the judge said that, okay, there's a 14th Amendment, but there's nowhere. First, Congress is the one who decides what to do, not Jenna Griswold, the Secretary of State. Secondly, yeah, there isn't really, as I understand it, any
enforcement mechanism.
The petitioners and I think the Secretary of State secretly anyway, or at least not publicly at this point, they think that the 14th Amendment is self-executing. You can implement it just on anyone can implement it on a whim, when necessary. And that's really not how we can get into the history of the 14th Amendment, but I think we all recognize that it was a necessary amendment post-Civil War during Reconstruction. And, we're well past that now. We're into the 21st century, and the 14th Amendment, that provision of it really doesn't apply anymore. It certainly doesn't apply with respect to Donald Trump. Or even the events surrounding January 6th. But the long and short of it is these people think they can just do it on their own or worse, have a district court judge agree with them and do it.
Right,
and that's not what the framers of the 14th Amendment contemplated.
No.
I assure you that.
Well, exactly. That some, Denver district court judge appointed by a Democrat governor could unilaterally decide who gets to be on the presidential ballot in this state. I mean, like you said, it's just sort of ludicrous.
Well, but the other local judge that prevented a local person from running, saying he was a January 6th.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's as ludicrous as it is, there's nothing too ludicrous these days for the left.
Well, I think this, from my observation, layman's observation, I think this judge has been fairly reasonable to date. We did have a number of motions denied, but I suspect, I'm speculating, but I think those motions were denied just because perhaps in the judge's estimate, the best thing to do is let all sides present their so-called evidence, let it all play out, and then she'll render a ruling that's going to be appealed one way or the other. So I don't have any reason to suspect that we're getting a shaft at the moment. But again, anything can happen.
You know, you raise a
point. That's a Polis appointee of about a year, so anything could happen.
You raise a point, though. I was saying this on the show the other day, that the judge did, you know, deny the motions to throw it out. I've covered a bazillion, and that's not probably a technical number, but court hearings, and hardly ever, maybe not hardly, but it's not very common that judges throw motions, things like this out. Usually, and as this judge said, these are issues and matters to be decided.
I guess I really don't agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, what are the issues to be decided? Well, is Donald Trump an insurrectionist? It's pretty easy not to have evidence. When you say, okay, this is the 14th Amendment, it no longer applies, it's not applicable, and therefore it's gone. I mean, that's not...
I think a lot of us would agree with you, Chuck, but my gut tells me that the safest course of action is to let everyone put whatever they want in the record and then have the decision rendered. So,
well, lawyers always agree with that. They can bill up a lot.
Explain, Dave, because it's going to be pretty interesting, like you said, and people are saying thank you for being the chair and getting, you know, fighting for Donald Trump. So you've got Trump, and the Trump campaign has, I mean, there's going to be a whole ton of lawyers in there. Their lawyers, how is this going to play out in terms of actual, you know, just sort of logistically?
On the website for the courts, they put all the briefings and orders that have been rendered so far onto one single page, and I'll try to text that to you so you guys can get it out if you like.
Okay.
But in one of those, I think one of the briefings or orders, they decided how the format and logistics are going to operate, and so each counsel is going to be afforded a certain amount of time to present evidence and take testimony and direct and cross and all that. And this thing is scheduled to go for about a week. So it's going to be pretty robust. In addition to all that, they also list out the topics that are to be discussed as well. And as you can imagine, the petitioners really want to talk about January 6th and bring in so-called experts that back up their claims. Again, I tend to think that this is just the judge wanting to be thorough and hopefully being fair-minded to allow all sides to put forward what they think is important. And then after all that's been entered into the record, she'll make whatever decision she's going to make.
Well, let's say you have attorneys who are now billing at very reasonable rates, and today reasonable rates is $500 an hour. And so you go through, let's see, 5 days, 8 hour days, that's 40 hours, and there are usually two or three or four attorneys there, so that's $1,500. So you're talking about $150,000 in legal fees that have been burned up. Because a person, and that doesn't count all the legal fees going into doing those briefs and everything else. So you're talking about $250,000 being burned up by this judge who doesn't care. I mean, you know, what the hell does she care what burns up? Thank God that you're the chair and we're smart enough to go out and get great attorneys who are willing to represent you on a pro bono basis. And you couldn't have any better in the country. I can just imagine what this has been like if Chris Murray and KBB had been in charge of this.
I don't mean to laugh.
we are certainly thankful and appreciative that we were able to find world-class representation at no upfront cost or any cost to us. We are getting, you know, at the end of the day, because this is going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, or at least appeal to that level. At the end of the day, I think collectively we're looking at millions of dollars with all parties and what they're putting into this effort. I mean, this is an historic case too, so it sort of makes
Your point is, I think, just for the reason for the state to enter in, and the judge did allow the state to enter in, is that, you know, the judges shouldn't be deciding, or, you know, Democrat-funded organizations shouldn't be deciding who gets to be on the ballot. Coloradans should get to decide, and Colorado Republicans should get to decide, well, and unaffiliated
and Democrats switch that day over to Republicans.
Theoretically, at least. I mean, well, reason why the state is involved, sticking up for our rights, basically.
Right. So our position, obviously, our position aligns with President Trump. We want him on the ballot just as he wants to be on the ballot. But we think it's bigger than just one candidate. If they're able to get away with this, then, you know, what are the implications moving forward for future presidential elections? We should be able to qualify or decide who the qualified candidates are in our own political party, not anyone else.
Just don't leave it to presidential candidates. I say there have been local candidates who have been thrown off the ballot by judges in states.
Sure.
And so you're talking about your whole
Democrats' elections are so pesky and troublesome and can be.
Well, Ron Hanks was in Washington on January 6th, so maybe he shouldn't be able to run again.
Right. And well, let me to clarify too, this, and we say a trial, but this is actually, it's a trial to the judge, right? There's not the court, there's not a jury, right?
Right. This is not, there's no jury. This is all going to be decided by one judge at the district level, and then will be appealed up accordingly. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, okay, so just, and I know you're not the lawyer, but I'm sure you've been, you know, involved.
You played one on TV,
and you look like one kind of now, too, there. So it seems to be the kind of two issues, and I'm wondering if you have any indication, and Chuck, you could maybe have some thoughts on this, too. So you do have the whole just constitutional issue, and that doesn't really matter whether Donald Trump did or didn't do anything, right? It just as a supply. Then you have the other issue was, did Donald Trump
act as an
insurrectionist, which is a crime, which it's kind of like, how can... I mean, I would think that'd be a weird legal stance. You have Donald Trump,
there's
the individual.
There's no such thing as a weird legal stance.
Good point. But I mean,
unless you're attorney for Donald Trump, and therefore you in arguing like John Eastman did, that he could do various things that he...
And now they'll throw you in jail. Yeah, exactly.
So there's a lot going on with this particular case. This is a little in the weeds, but this is a 113 proceeding, and we're not supposed to actually be dealing with constitutional questions in a 113 proceeding. However, the petitioners are obviously bringing up the 14th Amendment in the Constitution and using that as a basis for their whole thing. But then when we offered our motion to dismiss, let me back up. When we offered our initial briefings that laid out our First Amendment concerns, the petitioners filed a response to dismiss that portion of our briefing, which the judge granted, saying that 113 proceedings don't deal with constitutional questions.
Well, that's the whole point.
There's a lot going on here, and I don't fully understand the logical consistency, if there is any, in all of this, but I assure you is that that by whatever means necessary the petitioners have at their available to them to get Donald Trump off the ballot, they're going to seek it out and do it out, and I suspect that no matter what, this week that's coming up with the trial is not going to be the last of it. We're going to have more court proceedings. And to Chuck's earlier point, thank God we got the representation from the American Center for Law and Justice.
Right.
Well, and as a practical matter, you know, when I used to study medieval history, they'd always have these entire conferences that would last a week and longer. And on how many angels could you fit on the top of a pin. And it was about is about as illuminating as this is going to be. Everyone will be arguing. They'll have the most, you know, most brilliant Jesuit priests who are lawyers these days arguing all these complicated rules and motions for excluding and everything else, all to get to the common sense one. No, people should get to vote for who they want.
Right. I think that's right. I mean, look, at the end of the day, the voters in 2016, they made it very clear that the major political parties are the ones who are supposed to be qualifying candidates, not anyone else, and especially not the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State's role is purely ministerial. She's supposed to make sure that every candidate crosses every T and dots every I, and that's it.
Right.
And so the petitioners are trying to usurp the will of the voters when they pass Proposition 107. And we think that's inappropriate. It's the party's responsibility and the authority granted to us by the people to decide who bona fide candidates are. And we believe Donald Trump is a bona fide candidate.
Right. Well, as you know, one of the
he only happens to be the most leading with 60% of the. Yeah. The Republican vote, you know.
That's a thing. And I know you can't say this, but I've covered, again, a lot of court cases. And this is this is a Denver District Court judge. I mean, she doesn't usually deal with sort of like, you know, country changing decisions. And
why do you think she decided to have at least a week long trial?
Very
busy docket, which always tell you they're overburdened, they're overwhelmed, yeah, they don't have enough time. Oh, a famous case?
Yeah.
clear the box.
Chuck, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they're called a case of first impression or something like that. So
yeah, uh-huh.
That's it is a historic, whether we like, I don't think it should be going forward, obviously, because we filed our dismissal brief, but you know, like it or not, it is a historic case, and it's going to.
And lawyers and judges love historic games.
Yeah. Is it going to be televised?
Yeah, it is. There is going to be media coverage. I believe CNN was granted permission along with a few other outlets. But I also think, if I'm remembering correctly, there's also some sort of court Zoom
WebEx, yeah, that you said it in COVID. Okay, so, and you'll, I'm sure as a party, you guys do a great job alerting everybody where they can watch it if they want to, right?
Yeah, I'll let me confirm that, and if there is a public WebEx or something like that, I'll go ahead and send it your way.
You know, once again, I want to give credit to you, though, because when this all started, these suits have been in various places, you know, in other states. And there was no indication, you know, Colorado was just one of several, right? But it looks like, for whatever reason, Colorado was first out the gate. And I think that's why. You got to wonder, maybe everybody else will wait and see what happens in Colorado. Or everybody?
No, they will not wait and see what happens in Colorado because all of them want to get, you know, if you're Trump, You know, you've got to fight off all the other ones if you're the plaintiffs. Well, no, you want to get, you know, contrary decisions in different places to make sure that it goes up. And moreover, if you're just doing it on a state-by-state basis, if you can get cut out in this state but not that state, you know, it's good enough. Trump is rated as 4 points behind by Emerson, which isn't much in Colorado. So if you can just get Colorado, that's not a bad deal. Or whatever other states you want to try to get.
I mean, Chuck's right. You know, if you're the opponents, the petitioners in this case, then you're doing everything you can to knock them off the ballot wherever, whenever, and.
But as Colorado seems to be kind of going first, I'm just once again glad that you have got the state party involved in the fight rather than saying, well, it's just Trump's problem and other places will handle it. We'll wait and see, because it could end up being, you know what I mean?
Yes,
if it goes up,
absolutely.
It could be the Colorado case could be the pivotal one,
absolutely.
Essentially, that gets to the Supreme Court. So the kind of job that you guys do matters a lot,
I think,
you know. Just out of curiosity, is it the same Trump team that's doing it another, like, or the,
well, they got local ones. You got Scott Gessler.
Okay.
You got a lot of lawyers. The local attorney for Trump is Scott. And then our local attorney, his name is Matt Melito, I believe, or Mike Melito.
Oh, he's got the best job ever. Right. Oh, didn't get to charge though. Forget it. Never mind. I mean, if you don't, it'd be in hoc vice. You just sit there billing at $500 an hour with your feet up on the table.
The other people do that.
I mean, they're all participating. I mean, because this is a historic. It's a historic.
Right.
It seems you're kind of enjoying it in some sense.
They're all participating. You know, we did some pre-trial prep just to kind of go over what briefs we had, so we all understood exactly what we were wanting to convey in our arguments. But you know, it's annoying, but it's also somewhat exciting because it's historic.
Right. Well, then you were saying, so the trial starts Monday, and you're also a witness too, right?
I am. I'll be one of the witnesses, obviously, for the party to essentially testify to what our role is in this whole process and why it's important, or at least why we think it's important that it be maintained and unharmed.
Well, you know, it's a good thing you are there. So KBB would be like, well, I don't know. I have to call and see what the consultants want me to say. And there's people over.
Okay, I know she'd say. They're right. Boy, no, after hearing their arguments on this thing, we have no right to be, you know.
I was talking to Dick Wadens and he told me Trump is the reason we keep losing. So
I'm not sure my predecessor would have intervened to begin with.
No.
Again, this is bigger than Trump. The party has a right to ensure that we get to decide who our candidates are and not be undercut by a hyper-partisan Secretary of State that just wants to create chaos.
Well, and do we think for a second, that's right. I mean, if this is successful, and this lawfare tactic is one they're doing all over the place, I could easily see, say, if somebody runs for governor, right, and they said something somewhere, I mean, you could twist the law around any way you want.
That's the laws there for.
And file the suit. And I mean, Trump at least has money, and you've got people working, you know, pro bono. But if you were a candidate, and, you know, all of a sudden now you get this crew organization filing a lawsuit trying to keep you off the ballot, and, you know, in top of campaign fundraising, you got to fundraise for the lawsuit. I mean, it could be a real, I mean, you're right. The implications and the possible misuse of this are staggering, really.
Yeah. I mean, this is a very serious threat and we're taking it very seriously. And, you know, we're fortunate to have partnered with the American Center for Law and Justice, but we're also partnering with the Trump team. And, you know, we're all trying to do our part to make sure that Coloradans get to exercise the right to vote. If you don't like Donald Trump, vote against him.
Right, exactly.
Don't take him off the ballot. That's un-American. Right. And it violates the principles of one man, one vote. We fought for suffrage, a long history of that, and now we have...
Well, that's just yesterday thinking.
Did the Democrats tell us who to put on our ballot, one way or the other? And then...
if they get on the ballot, then they'll cheat by mail-in balloting.
Hey, maybe while we've got you real quick, I know because there's so much going on, any updates on the opt-out lawsuit? That's proceeding along? Or I know John Eastman's been a little busy, so...
Yeah, the open primary lawsuit, rather. It's it's coming along. I didn't know this until a couple of days ago, but the state actually replied, and they didn't file a motion to dismiss. They just gave a
really?
Response to our initial.
An answer.
Yeah, they just filed just an answer. So there's no timeline now for the judge to decide whether or not to dismiss it. We can go straight to kind of scheduling.
Oh, that's good. Do they have a certain period of time where they have to do that, or they can just do that like next week if they want?
No, the court can schedule whenever they want to schedule.
No, yeah. But can they file a motion to dismiss? Do they have a time frame that they have to file that in?
Well, once you've answered, then it's not a motion to dismiss.
Then you can't say,
you can file a summary judgment, which is saying we don't need to go to a trial on this matter. We can decide it just on these facts. But after you've answered, you can't file a motion to dismiss. You file it before your answer.
Oh, that's pretty good news
So what I'm being told by Randy Corcoran and Eastman is that they're going to a scheduling conference soon, and they're going to try and get something on the books so that we can go to trial.
Yay!
So the consensus was that for some reason the AG's office I don't know, mistakenly did us a favor by not, not dragging us out with a dismissal.
Or maybe...
Well, I'm sure they had.
Maybe their plan is to just go ahead and just file lawsuits to keep everybody off the ballot so they don't have to worry about it.
They've got, you know, they pay quite attention to that case. And so it was well thought out of
whatever their strategy is. If we can, I'd like to ask, maybe we could kind of keep in touch with you through next week. And if you don't have time, maybe somebody just to kind of get a sense of how they think things are going. I know.
No, well, you can tell some judges because they scream and yell at you. Others, like the previous one we had with the Carter appointee, he was very polite. He had no idea.
Well, let me give credit where credit's due. This is public record. The petitioners wanted to depose President Trump. They wanted the court to compel President Trump to go through a deposition.
Oh, of course they did. Course.
And the judge was like, no, it's one. This is too late because they did try to get it later on, but she said it was too late and inappropriate. So I can't really.
That sounds fair.
I can't fault this judge. I think this judge is trying to play it down the middle, and you know.
Right.
I can promise you never know.
Yeah.
but at least you have the semblance of a fair judge, because when you get the other kind, which I had in the last case.
Like that goofy judge in New York. We don't have that. Right, yeah, we don't. Right. If she starts putting makeup on and everything like that for the camera, you know, that could be a bad sign. No. All right. Well, Dave, hey, thank you for all you do.
Yeah,
and good luck next week. Where I'll be.
Anything new? Update the folks on the Republican Party?
Yeah. I mean, Carrie, get your Carrie Lake tickets. That's November 4th, about a week from now. So we still have some seats left, but it's filling up fast.
Okay, and they just go to the state. Where do they go to get
those? Right. So go to the website, collogop.org. There'll be a pop-up, and you can just click the pop-up, and they'll take you right to the tickets.
And I can tell you from all of the fun people are going to be there. So you should go. Everyone should go. Anyone who is fun is going to be there. So
well, all the stick in the mud rhinos probably will not.
That will not be there.
Probably not.
All right, Dave. Thank you for your time.
Thanks,
Dave.
Take care. Thanks for being with us.
All right. Thank you. All right. We've got, and guys, we've had a ton of comments here. Let's see. Will the Colorado GOP do a daily synopsis on the court proceedings on the website?
No.
My guess is, Sandra, they would not. A lot of times judges don't like
right.
the parties involved to do that. I'm sure there'll be media coverage, and we'll do our best to cover it, too. Will they have expert testimony? Yes, it's going to be almost all expert testimony. This is an age old question from Jacob. What do you say to the dumbest person in the courtroom? Yes, Your Honor. From Charlene, Williams is so well spoken and unfazed by the insanity. Yeah, he'll be a good witness. And then from Jacob, the judge just wants his or her name in the paper until it gets overturned by a higher court. Then it'll be Judge Who. And then Sandra, thank you, Dave and Anna. I always listen to Randy's radio show. The judge is currently sharpening her backstabbing knife, and Charlene says, yay, Dave. Well, what I was saying is, and they probably won't be able to comment that, but we'll know depending on what the judge allows in and out in terms of testimony and expert testimony. For instance, in the John Eastman trial, Rachel Alexander, the reporter covering that, keeps pointing out that she's not letting John Eastman present half of the stuff he wants to present.
If it's a halfway biased, unbiased judge, you will not. I mean, they will not exclude right. testimony you should have in. And
right.
Obviously, the one in New York and here, the judge, you know. So I don't think this judge has only been on the bench for years. She doesn't want to embarrass herself. Sounds like she's been conducted in a fair way.
It's starting out,
And what's her conclusion of that is who knows? And as we found out with our last case with John Eastman, I mean, he conducted it in a very fair manner, but he was writing up.
Because you're right, judges don't like to be appealed for not letting something in. So if you know what you're going to do, if they know what they're going to do anyway, they don't care about letting it in.
Right,
they're like,
right.
all right, whatever. And they're actually playing Candy Crush on their cell phone, right. While they're waiting. Well, speaking of, but it's kind of a legal show today. Some other stuff we wanted to talk about. It's always important to pay attention to what's being leaked. Where's it coming from?
Half a second before the legal stuff. You know, yesterday, day before yesterday, We're all thrilled about Mike Johnson and how he's going to be the greatest thing since sliced
bread.
Oh,
you want to go straight to there?
Yeah.
Okay.
And in the last couple of days, he's been what I think.
He's become depressed already. Chuck became depressed. And just as Rev had a golf lesson because we didn't have school today. And in between the time they got back from the golf lesson and the show started, yeah, Chuck has plummeted into depression over the new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. In part, I can play the soundbite.
Oh, good.
Okay. So in part, this is why. So, Thomas, I'm going a little bit out of order, but if we could play the Johnson on Ukraine soundbite. This is Johnson on Hannity earlier.
Issue. I told the staff at the White House today that our consensus among House Republicans is that we need to bifurcate those issues. I agree with your assessment in Ukraine, and that's why the American people are demanding some real accountability for the use of those dollars. Now, we can't allow Vladimir Putin to prevail in Ukraine because I don't believe it would stop there, and it would probably encourage and empower China to perhaps make a move on Taiwan. We have these concerns. We're not going to abandon them, but we have a responsibility, a stewardship responsibility over the precious treasure of the American people. And we have to make sure that the White House is providing the people with some accountability for the dollars. And we want to know.
That's okay. Just the opposite. What
you're saying. Yeah. Explain why you're so depressed about that.
Well, because he one gives the argument that all the people want onward, you know, years and years of bleeding us dry, saying we can't let Vladimir Putin because he'll invade Poland and then China will, because the Ukraine will go in and take Taiwan, and
right,
it's the same, you know,
military industrial complex argument.
Yeah, yeah, dominoes deal.
Right.
And so that means unlimited amounts of money. Then he says we want some accountability. Oh, great!
Right, right.
We'll put a commission together, and we will have an accountability board, and we'll make sure that everybody, including the Democrats, gets their cut.
Right, that's a problem.
I mean, you know, and J.D. Vance, who's been a strong person on the Ukrainian one, was
saying, what the frick?
What the hell? What happened to you in one day?
In one day.
And then the other one on there, he asked about abortion. Now, Johnson has been called an abortion extremist. He has, in the past anyway, said that he wants a federal ban on all abortion. And on Hannity's show, he said, well, it's up to the states. Well, I agree with that position. I think it's up to the states. I think it's terrible for the states to say you have to, you know, have a federal thing say you have to have abortion, or a federal one like I had before saying you had to allow abortion. But that's 180 degrees from what he said before.
Well,
and so everything, you know, you kind of, what? I mean, I agree with that one, tell you the truth. But it's certainly not what you felt before.
Well, and before, wasn't he saying he was opposed to any more aid to Ukraine? Or what was he saying before?
Well, yes, by implication that you know, this wasn't something we wanted to, you know, spend all our money on and everything else. And as a practical matter, particularly today, I mean, it's now mud season in the Ukraine. The counteroffensive has failed. And as a practical matter, neither side can seem to be doing an offensive operation, which means, you know, a long, drawn-out war of attrition. And the only way that Ukraine can do a long, worn-out war of attrition is to use all of our blood, sweat, and toil, and all our money of hundreds of billions of dollars for years into the future. And I don't
think there's that many Ukrainians. I mean, first of all, look at the ridiculousness of it. So we took all the weapons from, not all, but weapons from Israel, sent them to Ukraine. So now we've had to send them back. I still submit, this is partly joking, but I've become increasingly convinced of it. You look at the reporters, I was watching the Fox News reporter reporting live from the Gaza, the border. You can see the stuff going on behind him, right? You can see all this stuff. We see zero pictures like that out of Ukraine. We see pictures of injured people, blown up buildings, bodies, right? I mean, interviews with these people. We see zero of that out of Ukraine. Right. I still have serious questions. And the problem with the accountability is, as Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch explained, a lot of the money is simply going from Ukraine to people like Sam Bankman-Fried, who are then laundering it and donating it back to the politicians.
But even if that wasn't that, true,
she could do it. Kamala could do a Venn diagram, and she goes, the money comes here, then it comes back to Biden, and then, I mean, They're not going to say that.
Well, of course not. And you won't be able to trace it. And Ukraine is maybe one of the most corrupt states in the world. But even if it wasn't corrupt and 100% went into missiles.
It's too much.
Yeah. I mean, we cannot endlessly fight another war along with doing the war in Israel. And we'll give them 14 or 16 billion, which I don't object to. But it's disgraceful, and we're just pouring money out.
Well, and right, you're right. And well, because what happened is the first phone call congratulating him, I'm sure, was from when the one donor who was Kevin McCarthy's big donor said, "Oh, I'll continue donating to Mike Johnson." I'm sure that comes with strings. I mean, we talked about this before when we were talking about Jim Jordan. In part, it's probably almost impossible for the Speaker of the House to be not corrupted because it's their job to bring in
one
money.
Day,
well, yeah, you can come
last one day
through the
couldn't
weekend.
Couldn't you kind of leave your pinky toe out, you know, just a little bit? And he also cited in some interview of Crenshaw, the one-eyed McCain, and how wonderful he is. And he's saying anybody who doesn't support the war in Ukraine is pro-Russian. I mean, yeah, that's a great person you ought to cite. I mean, he's become exactly what you don't want. That was bad.
It was faster than we hoped. All right, now we go on now to more cheerful subjects, all the legal stuff.
Lawsuits.
One of the things I wanted to point out is it is always important to anymore, you have to have just such a cynical / common sense view when people start leaking things. So earlier this week, leaks coming from the prosecution office, the Jack Smith, the people, you know, persecuting Donald Trump over the January 6th stuff, the leaks were coming out, and I think ABC reported them, a lot of people reported it, that Mark Meadows had been wearing a wire during the conversations with Trump. Now, Meadows' office finally came out and denied that, right? Yeah, and apparently now everybody is unreporting it, right? But here's what I think is going on, and I talked about this a little bit the last show. All of these gag orders and all of these legal maneuverings, they're all of them are contempt of court traps for Donald Trump. I think because Mark Meadows is a witness, right? So I think they, and Donald Trump is supposed to not comment on the witness. So I think they leak stuff, number one, because it helps make them look good, that Mark Meadows wore a wire and we have all this stuff against Trump. I mean, how often have we heard, the bombshell, and then it turns out to be not true at all. Not even like close, not true at all. And I think that Jack Smith did this one on purpose to try to bait Donald Trump into commenting about Mark Meadows, and then they turn around and find him in contempt of court and put him in jail.
They'll do anything. I mean, right. Nothing is beyond them, and nothing does more to destroy any faith you have in this system than these ludicrous Trump trials.
Right. Well, and then going on from that, then let's talk about the Grassley stuff. Okay. You want to talk?
Well, you can go ahead.
What happened, this was the 27th, a couple of days ago, Grassley, Senator Grassley, who's investigating and part of
the senator from Iowa.
Yeah, all of the Hunter Biden crime family stuff, wrote a letter, and it revealed numerous things.
A seven-page letter. Footnotes and everything else.
And demanding answers, which, of course, he won't get. But one of the things that was laid out clearly is something that we've kind of already suspected. It's like the Russia hoax all over again, right? You start looking at stuff, and it just doesn't add up. You suspect things, and then you find out, oh, my God, it's even worse than we thought. So at one time, and this was going back years before Biden was elected, they had various up to 40 confidential informants, FBI confidential informants, who were telling the FBI, the IRS, the Department of Justice about alleged criminal activity by Joe Biden, James Biden, and Hunter Biden. And throughout the country, there are various FBI field offices investigating all of these various claims, right? But what they have found out through whistleblowers and documents and things like that is it's eventually all of this stuff was funneled through the main FBI office in Washington, D.C. And what did they do with it? Well, and Grassley outlines it in this letter. They slow walked it. They made them keep
approval from 17 different individuals.
Literally.
Which they thought, well, that's not possible. Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, who would be 17 people? Can you see if in, not just approval, but approval for them to do anything, right? Approval for them to question this person, approval for them to talk to this person or that person, approval to do whatever. It had to go up a chain and in many cases have 17 different people sign off on it, which is sort of stupid. That's just all of them covering their butts, right? I mean, there's only one person.
No, it's not. It's because one doesn't do it. You know, you don't have one per year. This time, another time. And it slows everything incredibly down.
Right. Well, and then he's written to Garland and Ray. But the other thing, it slows everything down. And then what they did was, and we saw this with the Hunter Biden laptop issue, where it's just Russia disinformation, when the agents kept like investigating stuff. And they're like, okay, I've got my 17th, you know, approval now, so I'm going to go do this. They're like, oh. But they started calling all of the information foreign disinformation.
And then it closed it down. It closed down the confidential informants. And not only did it do that, but at the same time, in the House, because Grassley's in the Senate, they did a deposition of Brady, who was the attorney, U.S. attorney from Pennsylvania, that was supposed to be investigating on behalf of the Justice Department. And he said, no, it was ridiculous. The FBI slow walked it, refused to provide resources. The people in Delaware, where it was the awful Weiss-Wolf, the WW combination, which is what Merrick Garland said, I just left it to the Republican group and promised I interfere, and I didn't.
Yeah.
And his was scathing. I mean, just scathing. So you take Grassley and you take the U.S. attorney. And there's no question that there's a cabal in the Justice Department and the FBI that are just criminals that are preventing any investigation of Joe and Hunter Biden.
The thing too, when they started, so they formed this task force that just started calling everything foreign disinformation. And that's smart because that they don't necessarily have to reveal. They said, well, we'll tell you about it. We can't.
Yeah.
Even though some of the other FBI field offices looked into that and said, no, there is, it's not, right? No, our source is good. There's zero
and
evidence.
And you have to remember, much of this occurred during Trump's administration.
Right.
And so here are all the FBI guys, here are his Justice Department, his FBI, working against him, slowing down everything on the Biden side, and then persecuting him on the other side. I mean,
Well, I think it goes back to the FBI and the Department of Justice and the people who say
it's sad because I don't think they're any good people in the Justice Department, but the FBI, I do think there are. And when we blow up the FBI, we got to take them out.
It's back to, like we were saying, this was going on, like on the one front, they had created this whole, their own foreign disinformation campaign to go after Trump.
Right.
And then they used another lie about foreign disinformation to protect Joe Biden. And so you got to ask yourself, why were they protecting Joe? Now, clearly he was a candidate or was going to be a candidate, right? But why were they so protecting Joe Biden? And I think some of that goes back to Obama and the Obama people who the Obama people are like, we need to protect and our
because
cabal.
You got to protect Obama.
Right.
You know, I mean, Joe probably knows where some bodies are born or buried if he could remember anymore. But
So I think, and some of this gets in the weeds, but just like with the whole Russia hoax. I mean, we talked about that for years. And I think it's just, and sometimes you're like, oh God, I know it's another hoax. We know it's another hoax. But I think it's important to explain just how awful it is and how awful and corrupt the FBI and the Department of Justice are. And they are, I think, beholden to no administration, really, right? They're just beholden to their own deep state swamp bureaucracy anymore as well. And as long as Biden is going to be their useful idiot, they're fine with that, right?
Well, it doesn't matter who's the president because Trump was the president and they were attacking him and supporting the old Obama-Biden White House.
Right.
And the corruption is so deep and so
pervasive
that it's difficult to understand how you could ever have trust for these entities again.
Chuck, speaking of trust, we're going to play a little videotape that's going to show you, this is, as I'm being sarcastic, how much you can trust the DC police. So remember that idiot Representative Jamal Bowman, who pulled the fire alarm during the vote and
on leader
and said, oh my God, it was just an accident. I was trying to get out the door because I panicked and I was trying to get to the vote. Right. And so they did a whole thing. They investigated. And he ended up anyway, earlier this week with a deferred judgment plea deal to like, so if he behaves for like 6 months, it's something ridiculous. Right. Mm-hmm. It all goes away. Right. So he's not an insurrectionist or anything.
No,
now
he didn't obstruct official proceedings, so like people giving 15 years.
What he says happened is that he was trying to get to a door and he couldn't, and he accidentally pushed the door, but it didn't work. So he accidentally pulled the fire alarm. I mean, it was kind of vague as to how he did all this, but he makes it appear as if he was completely confused, had no idea, dazed and confused. And
we all make mistakes.
We all make mistakes, right? So let's play this surface. Why this didn't surface? Well, I know why it didn't surface beforehand. Silly me. It didn't surface beforehand because it shows the truth. But I want to play it, and there's no sound to it, but the video of what actually happens. So Thomas, if we could please play the Bowman fire alarm video. So what you see here is Bowman walking up. He takes down the sign, he rips it off the door, you know, fire, don't pull, pulls a fire alarm and then walks away. So he rips off the sign. So for those who are listening and not watching, so it shows him, it's a surveillance camera. So it shows him walking to the door. There are two signs. There are two doors, right? And there are two doors. And there's a sign that says basically fire exit. Don't go out here. Right. An alarm will sound. And so he rips off the one sign. He rips off the other sign, turns over
gently,
here.
Yeah. Quietly.
And then no panic, pulls the fire alarm and turns around and calmly walks away. Now, what's even particularly interesting about this is the DC police don't mention this in their affidavit, right?
No,
in their
they missed that part.
They missed that part. So he gets nothing for clearly, blatantly pulling the fire alarm.
No, it's not just pulling the fire alarm.
It is
trying to interfere with a congressional proceeding. That's a felony.
Right.
Yeah, pulling a fire alarm is not quite as serious as the other.
Right.
And so it's a joke. I mean, well, the whole system's a joke.
The whole system is. And this is from Sandra. And he gets a slap on the wrist while people who didn't do a darn thing on January 6th are in effing jail. That's true. This is from Jim. Sleepy Joe was putting four carrier task forces in the region and says it has nothing to do with Iran in answer to a question. It's just whatever. Leo says time to order ammo, even though I had a boat accident. What? the two-tier justice system is
revolting.
And so I'm glad, back to Dave Williams, that he's hopeful about this judge. It's scary. I was going to say it's sad, but it's worse than sad.
If you're trying to get a civil trial, if you're trying to get some other trial, they'll tell you how overworked they are, how burdened they are, how they can't do this and that. And I promise you, this judge was scheduled to do a trial of some sort, of some political.
It's a trial. I mean, you know,
but she took an entire week. Over a week with all the experts, they don't, you know, they'll be $1,000 an hour. It's going to be millions and millions and millions and a waste of time. And it's typical of our justice system. Also, a judge can look important. And see if she can screw around with whatever constitutional rights you still have.
Well, and again, and keep in mind, and once again, thank God that the grassroots has just grown such an influence in Colorado.
And we got a new speaker.
We're forgetting about him because it's Party Friday. But this lawsuit was filed by people who claim to be Republicans, right? It's like, it's only going to get worse because the latest poll shows Biden plummeting even more. Yeah. No one likes him now. And Donald
75% of Democrats still do. But 5% of Republicans, and at least as a Gallup poll, 75% of Democrats down 11 points.
Right.
35% of independents and 5% of Republicans.
Yeah.
I want to know who those five. We know there's some of those people here in Colorado.
Those guys like him. Hey, that's going to wrap it up for us on this Party Friday. I want to thank Dave Williams, all the great guys at BBS. We have rescheduled Brigitte Bridget Gabriel. She was born and raised in Lebanon and has some interesting perspectives.
Yeah, that'll be great.
That'll be on Monday. And also next week, this should be kind of interesting. The Colorado Convention of States folks want to come on and talk about what they're doing in terms of a
Convention of States.
Convention of States.
Okay. Change the Constitution.
To change the Constitution. So a lot going on next week. In the meantime, though, it's Party Friday. Thank you, everybody on Zoom. Catch all the shows at chuckandjulie.com.
Keep warm.
Yeah, stay warm. Oh, God, doesn't even go there. We're pretending that we aren't looking at the forecast. Bye, everybody.
Bye.